Hello and welcome to the Curiosity and Consciousness podcast. The intention of this podcast is to open your mind, get curious about yourself, and connect to the power you hold within. I am your host, Karen Maloney, an inside-out coach, helping you to believe in yourself and manifest your desires. Check out the podcast, available on all platforms, and go to my website, www.karenmaloney.com, for all info. Hello, hello, everybody. It's that time of the week again, and happy September. A new month has started. This year is flying. I hope you're doing well and all is going well for you. This week, my guest is Wayne Woodthorpe, and the conversation centers around inner child work. And Wayne is the co-founder of innercounsel.org, as well as an archetypal therapist who has dedicated his life to filling in the fascinating theory of his youth into visceral experience. This journey has taken him through all continents and a wide range of belief structures and metaphysical interpretations. Leaving a career in IT service management consultancy in 2004, Wayne has been based in Latin America, working with sacred plant medicines, therapeutic processes, and many complementary practices to the eternal transcendental spiritual goal. Working with people from diverse areas, including lawyers, actors, writers, police and military personnel, to those with terminal illness, depression, PTSD and addiction, he has come to understand a single divine etiquette that follows us through healing, revising behavior and attitude, and into the heights of our own authority and authorship. It is with these tools that he helps people today to deeply integrate and find meaning in their lives. I really enjoyed connecting with Wayne and having this conversation around inner child work, and he goes into a lot of different aspects of it and how when it comes to our healing as well, it's best to start at the beginning and integrate and clean up, as he says, and honor where we came from before we move on. And in order to really get to this place of being able to gain the wisdom and to reframe situations, we have to traverse the emotional center in order to do this deeper inner work. And essentially, he talks about how our inner child is abandoned. They're not playing ball. And that's because of emotional imprints from the past and not having our fundamental basic needs met, that we find alternative ways to meet these needs. And he talks about these 8 basic needs that we all must meet and how most of us don't get all 8 met during especially those developmental years up before the age of 7. And really, he talks about how inner child work is a gateway into a deeper understanding of ourselves. And once we move into this place of self-authority and clearing victimization, really the sky's the limit, and our inner child can be a powerful tool to lead us forward and create the life that we desire. So lots in this conversation to take, and this deeper inner child work is certainly something that's coming up for me, and I've been exploring much more lately and joined Wayne's workshop as well to learn more. And really, it is just such powerful work in connecting back to that innocence and that essence within us all, and allowing that part of ourselves to be a part of our life and integrating all the experiences. So enjoy this conversation. And if you want to find out more on Wayne's work, you can go to his website, www.innercounsel, that's I-N-N-E-R, counsel, C-O-U-N-C-I-L, .org. And all information will be there. There is loads of information on his website. And as always, I will have links from the show notes on my website, karenmaloney.com, and click the podcast section. Enjoy. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome and thanks for tuning in for another episode. Today, I have Wayne Woodthorpe joining me. I nearly tripped over my words there. Thank you for joining, Wayne, and you're very welcome.
Hey, Karen. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me onto your podcast.
Yeah, I'm really excited to delve into your work. You obviously have many different branches to your work, but of particular interest that we connected on was inner child work. So I'm sure we're going to explore more of that today. But maybe if you can just kind of share some of your background, first of all, with us to what brought you to this work.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think it can be told in many time frames. But it's very difficult to separate intuitive work from a deeper story and the background of our lives. So just a deeper interest in the world around me, spending time with indigenous tribes, going through as an observer first, an interest in animals and people. And then a deeper interest in the mechanics, so the psychologies, the sciences, and things in the background. And there was a big shift in my life when I went from physical mechanics. I was a service management consultant, and I was from designing softwares and databases, going in consultancy, explaining the philosophical side to a lot of these structures. And what I could find was the methodology, the frameworks that seemed to be the most efficient had something very similar within the background kind of mechanics of reality itself. And I naturally then went on to an exploration of the subjective, what's sitting in the background of this, how do we access it? The entrance into a lot of this psychological infrastructure is through healing processes. This is where the majority of our understanding of psychology, depth psychology, gets closer and closer to the systems or the architecture, if you'd like, of what's happening in the background. How is this all put together? How is the division of consciousness? And you can see around us that we generally tend to divide aspects in order to identify the characteristics or to talk about something, isolate something in its form to discuss. So that this is the very broad transition into these areas. I'm a very sensitive person, empathetic, and the complications that we faced in the world is something that I've had to penetrate quite deeply into. I can't seem to separate myself from the bigger picture. So an investigation into that, I think, intuitively led me, and I can see that there's a pattern with people arriving here after their consultancies or after their. There's a lot of IT people that end up working in psychology, meditation, religious studies, theologies, and things like that. So that's how I arrived.
Interesting. And I really love that question you posed as well, like what's sitting in the background and what's happening in the background. And I think that's when someone starts to explore that as well, it's really interesting. But again, we can be so cut off from it because it's not, as you say, the physical mechanics or things that we can touch, taste and see often. So it can seem very elusive or try to be labeled as woo-woo or nonsensical. But, you know, that's not the case the more we explore. But, and how did you come to then particularly specialize in inner child work? I'm sure like that you said you're sensitive and empathetic and you've been on a deep journey to heal and explore and uncover. And then what was it really that when you came to inner child work, maybe was a catalyst for you or just something clicked that really made sense to you?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question, and thanks for asking. So I saw traces, remnants of this in some of the indigenous ideas, all the way from Buddhism, the primary developmental stages, and also in the shamanic work in Africa, which I resonate with quite a lot. My heart seems to come from a place in that center of understanding. The emotional center, which we all have to traverse through in order to do our inner work, is almost an imprint, if you like, of how we came out of the primary developmental stages from up to 7 years. This is evolutionary psychology allowing us to be best fitted to the environment which we're growing up in. And obviously our modern society has changed so rapidly. There's no checks and balances in there to see what the collateral is. Once fundamental changes being made within our environment and our community. So I saw working with the Andean shamans, they put a lot of emphasis on looking at this emotional imprint and reviewing it. They see that as we come into a healing process, a spiritual healing process, there is dense energies, there are subtle energies, and these are almost entry requirements into understanding further about the deep psychology. The subtleties take you to the most interesting spaces. So we could see that there's a lot of doors left open in our past. This is why we urge the word integration quite a lot. It's like, before we move on, let's clean up after ourselves, leave this neat so that we can feel we've honored where we've come. So that the emphasis on the primary developmental stages when working with the Andean shamans allowed a focus for practitioners and people that I was working with, people who are coming for healing all from all different areas. It generally pointed them in the right direction as where this healing work is going to begin. So where do we begin? We begin at the beginning. A lot of the work that we do is a reframing of our situation, how we got here. And that reframing really needs to take a look at that emotional imprint that we've come out of those primary developmental stages with.
Yeah, I really like that. You know, that idea as well of integrating and, you know, before we move on or try forget or, you know, shove down, it's kind of clean up and honor and integrate what we have gone through. Because, you know, you use that word emotional imprint. And maybe just to explain a little bit more what that is exactly and how all of us definitely, I'd say, have emotional imprints of some form of another from those developmental stages or from that beginning of our life. And whether that's the beginning as in when we were born in our younger years or even before then in utero or even before then.
Yeah. It's interesting to put this forward because it gives me the opportunity to explain, and which we do. Most of the systematics here, most of the things happening are positive. And if we always understand that everything psychologically, everything within our biology is, it's an opening like a flower. It's an unfurling of something that wants to be expressed. So once we understand the mechanism of how this is happening, it allows us to approach the mechanism. So when a child is born and there's a huge susceptibility, and we'll never truly be able to understand the range of different experiences we can be born into and by a certain age deem them as normal. And if, for example, if I talk about the needs of a biological life, and this spans across animals and other life forms as well, is that it's looking for certain aspects within which to maintain their survival. And we identify during the inner child work 8 areas that we believe are fundamental needs of the inner child. And this is a primary from the life force and the biological congruence of a growing individual is looking for these specific conditions. And then once these conditions are there, then the primary motivation can switch to creativity, or it can go beyond just being here. So you see this in nature around you. A caterpillar might not come out of a chrysalis, or a plant might not do very well in the shade of your garden. So once we've established what those primary needs are, we can understand where we fit in with that. And what we can see is that there's a psychological matrix as well as a physical matrix that's trying to satisfy everything that we need. And if that isn't provided, for example, attention or love during the childhood phases, then we're prone to identify alternative surrogates, if you like. And so this can be something that feels good in a kind of similar way, and that will do. We're looking for the best. And again, reframing that these are needs. They're not wants. So Henry Harlow did a lot of work in this direction, and it was identifying the pathologies primarily, beginning the behavioral symptoms of removing some of these needs, and then seeing that as you slowly take these needs away, you're seeing pathologies, certain retardations, motor neural problems, and then death. So we've got a good understanding of the need, the things that the biological, the soft growing life form requires. And then on top of that, the other things. So this allows us to have a look at our behaviors. Now, you did mention, are all these things developed? In archetypical work, when we're working with the imaginative space and the subjective, there's a lot of different layers that can also be added on to these needs. And these are, we call them fictions, but certainly don't mean to undermine what they are. What they are is part of what we're going to use as a fiction. For example, cosmic abandonment. That if we're here as a little life form, and we're coming through this anyway, and we've got a big mission ahead of us, we do feel, before we even get here, as an attachment from where we belong, a homesickness, if you like. So if there's any remnants of that sense at all, does putting a bit more fiction or a bit more imagination around this, is it going to offer us a platform for healing something that we might not have had access to otherwise? So absolutely. And that there is this work is so individual to the person, and generally we wouldn't, while we're working with somebody, introduce a concept and which they hadn't brought to the table. So we play upon the concepts that feel real to the person that we're working with. During a long-term mentorship, if there's an area, a blind area where somebody's not getting to, then it may be that something is introduced. But this very much is a personal journey. Mm-hmm. And it's you that's got the power to be able to bring alive the potency within working with the imagination.
Yeah. So important as well to bring in the imagination as well. But, you know, you mentioned, and I totally believe 1,000,000% that, again, we're all just meeting needs, and there are 1,000,001 different ways we can meet them, whether positive, negative, or neutral. And it's kind of understanding that and having some empathy for people as well, because more judgment is not what they need in those circumstances. But, you know, you mentioned as well 8 fundamental or basic needs. And what are they?
Yeah. So if I can go through some of these needs, what I'll say to you about these needs is that we, during the workshop, for example, what we'll do is we'll go through one at a time, these, and isolate them, because the problem is when you first understand these needs, there's a lot of overlap. So you can write these things down, but without isolating them and understanding the very subtle overlaps and the very subtle differences in these. So the 8 needs that we've identified, and all of our work comes from psychologists and from people developing either in child psychology or in the sciences around psychologies. So the 8 fundamental needs of a child up until 7 to 8 years of life are security, love, affection, attention, support, nurturing, approval, and fun. So this novelty aspect on the end there, which is an ability to be able to interrelate with your surroundings in a way that can allow full expression.
Wow. Yeah. And obviously, you know, in a therapeutic or a supportive session, it's vital at times to be guided in these kind of deeper inner chasms and work. But are there practical steps as well that a person can take to even begin an awareness process? I mean, without going within and doing deep inner healing work and cleaning up, are there practical tips and steps as well that a person can do to even be aware of maybe their inner child?
Yeah. So let me just cover a couple of points so that I can go on to that. We give the workshop as an initial approach to the relationship with your inner child. And what we've understood is that there's a lot of tasks and meditations and things that people have done. But what's fundamental for the way that we work with the inner child is that there is an etiquette. And this etiquette exists within the level of soul as well. And it is in the subjective realm. I see it here in the physical realm as well, in everything from mycelium up to animals in an ecosystem. This approach to the inner child. The inner child, to begin with, is abandoned, essentially. They're not playing ball. And what the inner child is offering is insight into the higher subjective realm through this emotional center. So when we come into this relationship, people are often, this is the first time that they've approached something that appears to be different, or it's separate than their own sentient consciousness. And that the child is not going to play ball unless some of this etiquette, this aspects of etiquette, are acknowledged in the way that we approach our inner child. Very quickly throughout the workshop, we can get a very responsive inner child, but only because the design of the workshop is to make sure that we've prepared for the approach. We've acknowledged the approach. We've made an intention that we're going to continue this work on. The inner child knows our future. So it's a cautious approach, and it's quite difficult for me to recommend anything that, as the work is very much intuitive, as the work is developing something which is a wisdom within you, which is guiding you into your deeper intuitive self, the only things that we can do before might touch on theoretical elements. So people say, well, I spent some time with my inner child. That's like I looked after the neighbor's children for the day or something like this. It depends what you're looking for. A lot of the people that come to us for work, this is a gateway into a deeper intuitive understanding of themselves. So commitment is required. And this is where with a workshop being three sessions, it's generally the shortest way that you can get the door open, if you like.
Yeah, and that's totally understandable as well. But then, you know, you mentioned it as a gateway into a deeper understanding of ourselves and how our inner child knows our future. So what really are the benefits and the possibilities of reconnecting to our abandoned inner child?
Yeah, okay. This is the question. So this is why I, for example, it could be a good question, why do you do inner child work, or why do you do this? It's incredibly effective in its efficiency. What we're essentially doing when we approach our inner child is that we're stepping outside of our lives and we are observing back on it. So this can be a completion of a circle, if you like. There are some people who say, I remember this advice that I'm giving to my inner child now when I was 4 years old. So that's the completion of a circle. From that point on, we are, the biggest mental change is that we are observing our behavior. We're observing how we got to where we've got to and how we're operating now in the eyes of being a responsible parent, being there to look after the vulnerability and to satisfy the needs. Once those needs are in place through a relationship and an ongoing dialogue with the inner child, in a work that's 50% hanging around with the inner child and doing things that are fun, and offering mental space of novelty, and 50% on regressions, narratives that the inner child's taking us down. If we can, and we identify pretty quickly the needs that we believe were the most absent, what we see with this work is that once those needs have been satisfied, there is an ambiguous period where sitting in the comfort of having no needs to be required, when we're completely satisfied within where we are and what we've got, this is a period where our nervous system is learning what it's like to not be in a grasping, needy state. So that's an emotional requirement in order to have a graceful approach to what's happening deeper, a shift in the relationship with our inner child to something that's more profound. This is where truths can come through from the higher realm, which couldn't have come through before because they would have been polluted by the behavior of our unsatisfied emotions. So this is where balancing our emotional responses is essentially part of a spiritual purification process. So the quickest way that we can get through managing these dense energies, finding this emotional harmony, then we open up narratives with our inner child, which allows a deeper integration. So this can go very much into ancestral healing. But we're also, within our mind space, we are shifting into an intuitive synchronistic journey, which is our story. And once we're in our story, everything else takes a second. The roles get shifted around. We're at the center of things. People are characters. Outside narratives, for example, become timelines in other worlds. So this is the framework that we need in order to have self-authority, self-suggestion. This is where the final clearing of victimizations, anything left physically within our body. And then the sky's the limit. This is the hermetic space in which a lot of esoteric teachings, which purport to lead to truths, the inner child is the gateway to a simplistic truth which resonates. And this is essentially where this is leading. Different people have different paces, but the dedication and a committed attitude to this work gets a lot of results in a short amount of time. And this is where half of this developed itself intuitively, and half of it is just an eternal story that keeps coming back to us that we're tapping into.
Wow. I love that as well, you know, that clearing of the victimization or any remnants there, and then the sky's the limit. What a beautiful image as well. But, you know, something that just popped into my head as well that maybe I should have started with, but it's coming up now. It's like, who exactly is the inner child? Is it, you know, that abandoned part of ourselves that we cut off from because of, you know, emotional pains or traumas or imprints? Or is it that and the essence of the universe, source, or that elusive part as well? Like, who or what is it exactly?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'll start with it. Of course, you know that I've worked with a lot of people through deep transformations with sacred medicines. And when the foundation is rattled to its core, there's one question that comes up within us. What can we trust? And how do we know we can trust it? And this is back to this etiquette, this developing of an etiquette. Are you on my side, or are you sucking from me? Are you my mother, or are you an insectoid that's dripping my energy through an incision in my lower spine? Hopefully that gives a graphical interpretation of this. When we're looking in our spiritual work, we're looking to ground ourselves in exactly who we are. And this is one of the most profound psychological questions. Who am I? Why am I here? And what shall I be doing? The base, the real source of that. And I would I would agree with many different levels about what the inner child actually is. But for the therapeutic purpose, if, for example, we were born into a supportive community, if all our needs were met, if we believed that this was our story, our civilization, our flower, and we were contributing towards the emergence of that flower, and that we hadn't during our lives for any reason whatsoever have been compromised or sold out or been given incentives to slip away from what we're trying to express, then that, I think, is what we're looking for identifying within the inner child. A lot of this work, when we've got to find our way home, for example, when we've got to fill our heart, what's very exciting is that all the little things that we've identified in our lives that have allured us, that we've been attracted to, the twinkly things, that could be anything. It could be the idea, a place, or it could be an item, an article. It's an aesthetic that we're seeing in the world around us, an ornament maybe that a relative had when we were younger. All of these are small reminders of expressions of essentially what we're leading to and where we're going to find our wholeness. All of this information is contained within the essence with which we need to remember that came into this world with us in that untouched innocence. Innocence is something that's very much compromised today, and increasingly so by the pressures of modern society. So the inner child is there essentially to give us some idea of who we are at the center of ourselves and who we can trust. And within the work, this trust relationship that we build with our inner child is often carried out by people who have never trusted anything in their lives. When that trust relationship is bound, that trust relationship with the inner child leads us to go on to trust relationships in other areas of our lives. So what that says to me is that without this grounded sense of, yeah, that's me, we can never develop trust relationships because we're detached from the very foundation of what trust relationship would be in the first place. We need to know what it feels like. It's real and visceral.
Yeah. Trust, I think, huge, huge issue for all of us. When you said that, you know, when our foundation is rattled, you know, that makes so much sense. It's just like, oh my God, yeah. And I love that as well, that essence, that untouched innocence, like just such a beautiful image again came to my mind. It's like, oh my God, magic. But again, it's something that exists within us all. It is all of us, but, you know, we forget. And life can... For sure. Get muddled on top of us. But I believe that is the journey as well, in connecting back to that and remembering the truth of who we are, in whatever way, you know, best supports people as well, because there's lots of different avenues. But certainly from connecting with you today as well, the power of the inner child work is, yeah, mind-blowing as well. And just before we kind of wrap up as well, just because you mentioned it before and I meant to come back to it, you know, what are some examples, or do you have any examples? They don't have to be real life, but just an example of what a reframing may look like for someone.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what we're preparing people for from the get-go. This is something that people aspire to but don't know what it feels like, because in itself, it's a rebirth process. It's an unfamiliar to begin with, until those characteristics reform around again. So the reframing process is from our capacity, where we currently are, is that we understand that as the integration is done, and this is a very real integration, these meditations and regressions that we do into the past are allowing more information to come into traumas within our lives that couldn't necessarily have been expressed before. Upon the triangulation of information, once our inner child shares with us the key missing details, which makes our mind click and think, I get this, those things fall away. So the reframing process is partly integration. You're resolving. These things are my inner child said to me, I don't want to be in the past. I want to be there with you, but we've got to close these doors. This is the cleaning up the messiness. So it's half cleaning up after you. And the reframing process is that because you've got a trust relationship with something that's been truthful to you, which you can feel and trust in, which you didn't have before in your life, that gives you a semblance or a platform to feel very, very comfortable on. We've switched to an objective state of mind. We can see more clearly, less biasly, less emotionally, the things which have happened to us. And then almost as we could for somebody else's life, those things fit into place a little bit more. That's it on the biggest scale to describe it. But this happens through working with triggers, working with emotional responses. And we see each time that as these emotions are echoes of the past, that I remember the African tribes explaining that when there's an argument in the community, everybody gets a little bit excited. They think, oh, there's some work to do. There's something to explore here. Because there's always going to be a follow-up. There's always going to be an interpretation of it. And once you understand that, the explosion of this trigger is just screaming healing. So shifting also into what was that? Let's explore together. And we have people working with us that are couples. And the creative aspect of this gives incredible space for couples to reimagine and reframe the situation and go through this together. So there's many different reframing aspects.
Yeah. It's not it. And it's amazing. And I often say as well, you know, when these things come up, it's like, you know, like those African tribes, it's like, oh yes, okay, this is revealing something for me, instead of feeling like, oh God, here we go again. It's that mindset of, okay, there's something else ready to come up, something else for me to learn about me, to uncover about me. And, you know, it can get exciting if we have that kind of approach. Doesn't mean it's not uncomfortable at times still, but you know, again, we can quote unquote enjoy the process more, you know. What a fascinating conversation. And you know, you mentioned as well a couple of times your workshop and that you do workshops and that. So if you just share a little bit about the workshop and about your work in general before we wrap up as well.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, we have a website, it's innercouncil.org. On there, I would always encourage people to have a read through. It's been presented as dense for a reason. This is a quite a committed practice. There's a serious tone to this to begin with. Take a look at the testimonials, read through people's stories and how what they've realized through this transformation process. And then you can see that we offer a workshop, a one-to-one. We train practitioners. What's a little bit different about our work is that it's an experiential process, that people have to have demonstrated these insights that we expect as the trust relationship builds, before they can go into the practitioner part of the program, which is just the soft skills in order to make sure that the people that are doing our work and this work out there feel comfortable and this is a vocation, and they enjoy the work and they enter narratives with the people that they're working with. So it's making sure that we prepare people for this work. So I think the testimonials give a good explanation of what people have found through the workshop and the mentoring. And there's articles on there as well. And we have a forum and a community for people who have gone through the workshop. So that's what our website offers.
Amazing. And again, that was innercouncil.org. And again, as always, I will share links from my website, karenmaloney.com, to all your work, your website, your links and all that there for anyone who wants to go check it out. And yes, what a pleasure. You know, a lot of information as well for people to go away with. So thank you so much, Wayne, for joining and for sharing with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Karen, for reaching out as well. And again, this is a dual process. There's the interests that come along and what you do, but there's a beautiful intuition in the background. It's just linking the right people to who they need to talk to, and I truly honor and appreciate that process. So thank you.
Thanks for listening. And before you go, I would love to ask you a massive favor. If you enjoyed this episode or any episode of the podcast, I would love for you to leave a short review on Apple Podcasts to help it grow. If you could do that, I would greatly appreciate it.